Talking History. This is your host, Brian LeBeau of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. At a Rose Garden ceremony this past September, President George Bush decried Americans' ignorance of history. He described it as more than an academic failure. Ignorance of American history, he explained, weakens our sense of citizenship. The president then announced We the People, a new project intended to increase Americans' knowledge of their history. Present in the Rose Garden was Bruce Cole, chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, which created and will implement the project. Cole is our guest this week on Talking History. Also joining us will be Timothy Furnish, who will offer us his thoughts on how the media has represented the history of Muslim-Christian conflict. But first, Joey Skidmore takes us back to an important event that occurred this week in history.
This week in history, on April 20th, 1871, in what has become known as the Ku Klux Klan Act, Congress authorized President Ulysses S. Grant to use military force against the Klan. Following the Civil War, radical members of Congress attempted to curb the white power structure of the South. They designed a series of measures intended to give more freedom and equality to blacks, to help former slaves find employment, and to give them greater access to education and health facilities. Such measures included the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which protected African Americans from discriminatory Southern black codes, and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the United States Constitution, which made slavery unconstitutional, made African Americans citizens, and extended the right to vote to African American males. Southern resistors fought back by forming the Ku Klux Klan. The name is derived from the Greek word kyklos, meaning circle, and the Scottish word clan. Using a pseudo-philosophy of white racial superiority to justify violence, the Klan attempted to terrorize Southern blacks and white Republicans into submission, using intimidation, arson, and murder to achieve its goals. Congress responded with the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. It resulted in the imposition of martial law on 9 South Carolina counties and thousands of arrests. 11 years later, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the act unconstitutional, but by then the Klan had disbanded. It would be revived in the early decades of the 20th century in response to immigration and the civil rights movement.
Turning to items of historical interest in the news, a decorative staff and skeleton have been found at the site of the first permanent English settlement in North America, Jamestown, Virginia. And it would appear to be the remains of Captain Bartholomew Gosnold, second in command of the fort. Archaeologists describe it as the best-preserved skeleton ever found from that time period, and they will conduct DNA tests with a descendant of the Gosnold family to verify the identification. Gosnold commanded the Godspeed, one of the 3 ships that landed the first settlers at Jamestown in 1607. He helped design the first fort erected there, and Captain John Smith credited him with leading and ultimately saving the colony. Gosnold also discovered and named Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard. The remains will eventually be reburied at Jamestown. This is Talking History.
The ship had set sail today, set sail today. The captain had the crew in shackles. The edge of the world today, down, down, down. The ship had set sail today, set sail today.
Our guest this week, Bruce Cole, is the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. He's also a distinguished scholar, but he now faces the challenge of elevating Americans' knowledge of their history, which may prove to be a daunting task. Indiana University's Jim Madison spoke with Bruce Cole recently about that challenge.
Do Americans know much about our history as a people? What can be done to address the historical illiteracy that sometimes seems so widespread, particularly among young Americans? Our guest is Bruce Cole, chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Bruce is a distinguished scholar, a historian of art, who's written 14 books. Our subject today is not his books, as interesting as that would be, but rather the state of our knowledge about American history, and a new program that Bruce is leading at the National Endowment for the Humanities to help Americans make better sense of their history. Welcome, Bruce Cole.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
You wrote a few months ago, and these are your words, that we are in danger of having our view of the future obscured by our ignorance of the past. Let's begin with the last half of that assertion, ignorance of the past. Are Americans ignorant of their past?
Unfortunately, they are. There are a number of very good and accurate surveys that have shown that Americans, especially students K through 12 and college and universities, really don't know enough about their past. And our initiative, which we've called We the People, and your listeners can find out a great deal about that by clicking on www.wethepeople.gov, is aimed at addressing that. And it's important that we know, sort of the first part of your question, or is important that we know who we are as a people, where we've come from, what our shared ideals are, how we understand where we're going. I mean, history, as you know, you're a historian, tells us where we've come from, it gives us some sense of where we are, and it provides a compass to the future. And when we don't have that, we've lost our bearings.
Yes. Let's go back, though, to the illiteracy, or what you called historical amnesia. Can you illustrate that?
Yeah. Let me give you a few examples. And I think probably the best place to be would be to start with K through 12. As you know, there's a National Assessment of Education Progress survey done for 4th, 8th, and 12th grade. And since 69, assessments have been conducted in a number of subjects, including U.S. history. So the latest report card shows some really alarming data. For instance, 57% of seniors fall below basic comprehension. And, you know, this is when they've almost finished their studies and when they're going to go out and vote. 57% fall below the basic comprehension. 65%, let me give you another figure, 65% of 12th grade students don't know the primary purpose of the Bill of Rights. How are we going to know our rights and responsibilities unless we've learned them?
Do you think that those kinds of figures connect to the low voter turnout in America?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think that knowing history, knowing our rights and our responsibilities, makes for good citizens, and it makes for good citizenship, and it makes for good voting. And I do think that there's a correlation between low voter turnout, especially among young people, and their preparation of citizenship through the study of history. If I could give you just a few more, if we could turn away from the K through 12 and talk about what our older students know. You know, I was a college teacher and you're a college teacher, so we're really, this is something very important. And in 2000, a survey was given to seniors at 55 elite colleges and universities. And I think the singular figure about that is that this report revealed that 81% of these seniors, I repeat that, 81 would fail a simple high school level history exam. I guess that's not too surprising in light of what we've just discovered. Only 60% were able to get the Civil War years correct. We were within a 50-year spread. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One you'll like is 77% failed to identify James Madison as the father of the Constitution.
He wasn't the best of presidents, but he was pretty good.
Well, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good at the Constitution. Yeah.
So, but you know, in this survey, none of these 55 colleges required history. I think when the survey was done in 2000. U.S. history, I should say. None of them required U.S. history. When the survey was redone in modified form in this 2002, none of them still required any courses in American history, but only 10% required courses in international world history.
Yes, that's a very interesting piece of data, and I run up against that all the time in people assuming, as they talk to me, that every college student takes American history, but that is not an assumption at all that we can justify.
Right, exactly, and you know, it's really, I think, imperative if they're not getting it in high school that they study American history in colleges and universities.
So what is NEH? What is the National Endowment for the Humanities going to do here?
Well, you know, the NEH is the largest funder of humanities in the country, and we know we do a vast number of things, from the preservation of brittle books to films like Ken Burns through K-12, teacher training, through great research projects. And so we're going to use all the resources of the NEH to try to address this problem. You know, I should say right away that the NEH is not going to stop studying things international. We believe that we need to know about ourselves, but we also need to know about our place in the world. And the NEH for years has been a supporter of world history and literature and all the other facets of the humanities. So I want to assure you right away that we will continue doing this, and we hope to increase it. We are going to, in fact, we're underway with this initiative called We the People, and we were very fortunate to have the president launch this in a Rose Garden speech in September. I think that's the first time a president has ever launched an NEH initiative. And
we out here in America, Bruce, think that when that happens, when something happens in the Rose Garden, it really is important. Is that correct? Is that
I think it is.
There?
Yeah, I think that, yes, I do. And so we're delighted with the president's leadership and support, and that has been manifested last week in his budget, which called for $25 million for the We the People initiative. And we're just absolutely thrilled, and I think this is going to allow us to do good things. We've got to work with Congress, of course, to try to get that money appropriated. But let me tell you what we're doing now, and let me tell you what we're going to do down the road in 04. Right now we're doing two things under the We the People, three things under the We the People initiative. We are soliciting grant proposals all across the endowment, from museum exhibitions to scholarship to work on presidential paper, the whole gamut of not only American history but American culture as well. And I want to say that, you know, although we're concentrating on American history, we think that history is, of course, closely linked. I mean, it is also part of culture. So we will do things like museum exhibitions and preservation and the like. And right now we're just about to do to culminate two other things for this year. One is we're going to have our first annual Heroes of History lecture, and that will be coming up very soon. And what this will be is, I mean, we feel, you know, that history is not created only by vast impersonal forces, you know, economic or social. We're not just blades of grass blown in the wind by these, but that individuals do make a difference. That, and these individuals are often very fallible figures who perform extraordinary feats under often very difficult circumstances.
Yes.
And that they, and we want to celebrate them. I think they're, you know, all too often we take a magnifying glass to their feet of clay. And a lot of them did, but, you know, their deeds and their words went beyond them. They were greater sometimes than they were. And, you know, we have in mind a vast array of American heroes, famous, not so famous, obviously the founders, but scientists, inventors, civil rights leaders, suffragettes, astronauts, the whole gamut of spectrum of people who have really made a difference to this country. I want to celebrate them, and we find that they are inspiring, that they provide models and inspiration. The third part is going to be, an annual essay contest, which we've just concluded. And this essay contest is on the idea of America. You know, this is not, we're not bound by blood or birth or nationality or ethnicity. We're a country of immigrants. But we are held by together by a set of common ideals. I mean, that is the intellectual armature which holds us together. And we wanted students, 11th graders across the country, to think about this. And we only had this advertised for about a little over 2 months, and we got over 1,200 essays, and we selected a grand prize winner and five runners-up, and I read them and made the selection, and they're terrific.
Yes.
And we got them to write about great American principles like the rule of law, et cetera. And I think that's going to be an important part of this, and I hope that it will grow in the future and bring in many more thousands of young people who need really to think about this.
I want to get back to this historical illiteracy and connect it to what you're doing with We the People, however, Bruce. I mean, how do you intend this to change those survey results, for example?
Well, let me tell you what we're going to be doing along that line. I mean, in 2004, we have a whole new series of projects. Now, let me hasten to add that we will not This is not a zero-sum game. We won't take anything away. We'll be adding to what the NEH is doing, and I think we'll be enhancing the core missions of the NEH in all facets of the humanities. But we're going to do things, many things. For instance, we're going to have a major expansion of the NEH seminars and institutes, which will provide humanities teachers with, you know, additional opportunities to study significant texts on American history.
Including
and
high
culture.
School. Including high school history teachers for those summer
exactly.
institutes.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yes, summer, yes. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think of this as like a ripple effect.
Yes.
You know, that the teachers learn more about American history. They have they get a very content-rich experience. And then they go back, and then they teach their students and other teachers. And it's like a pond, like a pebble thrown into a pond. We're going to support model curriculum projects to help schools and establish and improving courses in American history.
That's wonderful, Bruce. I wonder if I can ask you to give, because we're just about out of time here, to give the website again for We the People.
www.wethepeople.gov. And I hope your listeners will turn to this, and I hope they'll think about, you know, ways that they can help, and if they're eligible, I hope they'll apply for grants.
Well, thank you very much. Our guest today has been Bruce Cole, who's chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, who is leading a new effort in the program We the People to address the problem of historical illiteracy in the United States. Thank you very much, Bruce Cole.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for, but I do know what it was is to. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta ta ta.
Continuing on the topic of improving our knowledge of American history, Fiona Beatty tells us about a resource for teaching and learning provided by the Organization of American Historians.
The OAH Magazine of History, published quarterly by the Organization of American Historians, makes available the latest historical scholarship in a form easily adapted for the classroom. Soon to enter its 18th year of publication, each quarterly issue of the magazine focuses on a particular theme or topic in American history and includes articles, recent historiography, document-based lesson plans, internet resources, and a regular column on how to use talking history in the classroom. Upcoming issues will focus on colonial slavery, witchcraft, the history of medicine, and the Vietnam War. The OAH Magazine of History is not only a valuable resource for teachers, but it also has much to offer college faculty, historical society and museum educational programs, students of education, and graduate students preparing to teach American history. To learn more about the magazine and to obtain subscription information or to order copies of previous issues, please visit the OAH website at www.oah.org.
And finally, we turn to our guest commentary of the week. Timothy Furnish takes on the media and its representation of the history of Muslim-Christian conflict. Furnish is a professor of history at Georgia Perimeter College.
In the year and a half since 9/11, the American media has generated a considerable amount of accurate commentary on the Islamic world and the history of the Muslim-Christian conflict. But on two crucial topics, jihad and the Crusades, most of our pundits have sacrificed historical accuracy on the altar of political correctness. Thus, in newspapers, magazines, and television specials, jihad is almost always portrayed as moral self-improvement in order to please God, and the medieval crusades are painted as unprovoked Christian attacks upon a peaceful and sophisticated Muslim civilization. Both of these presentations are false, and false views of history lead people to create false views of reality. For 14 centuries of Islamic history, jihad has been understood simply and primarily as holy war. Both Islamic doctrine and history bear this out. Hundreds of hadiths, or sayings attributed to Islam's founder Muhammad, define jihad as war to enlarge the scope of Islamic rule. The kinder and gentler definition foisted upon us by apologists in the media comes from the Sufis, a mystical minority branch of Islam. Most Muslims throughout history have understood jihad just as Osama bin Laden does today. It wasn't moral self-improvement that created an Islamic empire stretching from Portugal to Afghanistan. The lion's share of that vast Muslim state, the modern Muslim Middle East and North Africa, came from conquered Christian territory, taken from the Byzantine Empire in Egypt and Syria, and other Christian states across North Africa and into the Iberian Peninsula. Christian victories were few and far between, such as the Battle of Poitiers in 732 AD, which kept France, and indeed the rest of Europe, Christian. Thus the Crusades, which began in the late 11th century, were not the first time Muslims in the West fought, merely the first time that the West successfully fought back. Two centuries after they came, the Crusaders were eliminated. But the Muslim jihads against Christian Europe recommenced, led by the Ottoman Empire, which destroyed the Byzantine Empire, thrice besieged Vienna, ruled southeastern Europe for centuries, and fought on Germany's side in World War I by declaring holy war against the Western powers. The Ottoman Empire was tossed on the ash heap of history after World War I by the Turks, but jihads are still being declared, and in a new strain of propaganda intended to inflame the Muslim street, Americans and Israelis are known as crusaders. It's no surprise that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein play this two-sided card of jihad and anti-crusader rhetoric, and garners them support from the historically ignorant. What is disappointing is that our media treats this card as an ace, rather than exposing it for the joker it really is.
You've been listening to Timothy Furnish, professor of history at Georgia Perimeter College. Furnish is the author of Bin Laden, The Man Who Would Be Mahdi, published in the spring 2002 issue of the Middle East Quarterly. His commentary comes to us courtesy of the History News Network. And that's it for another week of Talking History. As always, we welcome your comments or suggestions either by email at talkinghistory@umkc.edu or by U.S. mail to Talking History, care of the Department of History at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, 64110. Talking History is a production of the Organization of American Historians. Joey Skidmore, producer. Fiona Beatty, assistant producer. This is your host, Brian LeBeau, reminding you that you can learn more about Talking History and the Organization of American Historians at oah.org. Have a Have a good week.
Edge of town, sitting there.